So I remember crying like 3 days postpartum with my daughter to my husband saying like, I don't think we should have another kid, like just overwhelmed by everything. And it took me a long time to get to the point where it was even like a possibility in my head.
You're listening to the Mommy Labor Nurse Podcast, where you'll gain the knowledge and confidence you need to erase the unknowns of pregnancy and birth and rock the newborn days like a boss. My name is Liesl Teen. I'm a fellow mom, labor and delivery nurse, and your host. Each week on this podcast, you'll hear a mix of birth stories, expert interviews, and other fun pregnancy and birth-related content. As a reminder, anything you hear on this podcast is not medical advice. Please see mommylabornurse.com/disclaimer for more details. And now let's get into this week's episode. Happy Monday, you guys. This week on the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast, we are doing a birth story. So Kat is on the podcast this week, and Kat reached out to me to share about the redemptive natural birth of her son after a traumatic first birth. You'll hear Kat talk about that first traumatic experience and how she struggled with processing her daughter's birth for a long time. She was so affected and she wasn't sure she could ever have another baby. But it doesn't end there. Kat's second birth was everything she wanted it to be and more. If you know me, you know I love a good redemptive birth story, guys. Yes. In her words, she was determined to make sure that birth didn't just happen to her, like that first time. And instead, she did everything she could to go into the experience feeling educated and empowered. Instead of spoiling the details of this story here in the intro, I am going to turn it right over to Kat because she is a fabulous storyteller, and I know you're going to find her story inspiring. So tell me, are you one of an estimated 80% of pregnant women that's hoping to give birth without an epidural? I hate to break it to you, but simply wanting it might not be enough. After the unmedicated birth of my first son, Walter, I knew I had to create an affordable online birth class designed just for moms that wanted to do the same. And that's how Birth It Up, the Natural Series, was born. Learn more about how to make your dream of a natural hospital birth a reality at mommylabornurse.com/naturalbirth. You can totally do this and we can help. Hi, Kat. Welcome to the Mommy Labor Nurse podcast. Thanks so much for being here today with me.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm sure. Yes. You got a nice little baby breastfeeding on you. So you might hear some some baby sounds, some breastfeeding sounds in this episode, guys. Not anything that we haven't heard before. So yeah. Kat, do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from, all that good stuff?
Sure. So I live in Peterborough, Ontario, in Canada. So it's about like an hour and a half from Toronto. So it's a smallish town. I'm a mom of two. I have a 3.5-year-old and a 2.5-month-old. And I am a small business owner and kind of just living that hectic, crazy life.
I know it. Yeah. Cool.
You know awesome. It very well.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, today we are going to do birth stories. And Kat, if you don't mind, usually what I tell people to do is kind of go back. We're going to do both birth stories today because I think they're both, you know, very relevant towards each other.
Yeah.
So what I usually tell people to do is kind of go back to your first pregnancy, how, you know, everything was back then, getting pregnant, how that pregnancy was. Then we can go into that birth story. And then we can do the same thing with baby number two.
Sounds like a plan. So our daughter, 3-year-old, we had gotten married in June of 2017. And then around in the fall, started thinking about, you know, maybe starting to have, I had baby fever. My husband's like, let's wait a little bit. And then we had decided, okay, well, we'll wait until the spring to start trying. But at that point, we also weren't doing anything to avoid pregnancy. So
got it.
The beginning of 2018, I was starting to feel like I was just so tired. I was actually New Year's Eve, so tired, like just went to bed early, like didn't drink anything. And I'm an early riser. Like the next morning I slept until like 11. I was like, this is really weird. And a week later I was like, it's been a little bit since I've seen my period, and took a pregnancy test and was like blown away that we were pregnant. So it was a very happy surprise. And my pregnancy was really, really great. Like, I'm someone who's like really blessed with fairly easy pregnancies. I loved being pregnant. So the whole time everything went kind of as planned throughout the pregnancy. And then I went overdue. So I remember I was 40 weeks pregnant, and I knew like, okay, first time baby, like you're most likely to go over, but I think nothing can really prepare you for that. Like that, as you see that date in the calendar come and go.
I know. And it's so like, it just messes with your mind so bad. I remember it wasn't as bad with my first, but it was like really, really just, I was just over it with my second. But yeah, it's totally just, you're like, come on, when is this gonna happen?
Yeah, like I felt great. Like I was still walking, like I was doing all the things. I'm like walking 10,000 steps a day, like I'm super active, and I'm like, okay, like I'm doing all the things. And almost every night that week I would have, I don't know if it was false labor, early labor, like have contractions, I'd go to bed and I'd wake up and I'd be gone. So that was a little frustrating.
Were they painful or were they just like?
Not painful, like just like, oh, I can feel something's happening.
Yeah.
And so the night before my 41 week appointment, I started having contractions again. I said, okay, like probably nothing. But like throughout the night, like I don't think I really slept that night. Like they started building up. In the morning, I started timing them and they were like 6 to 8 minutes apart. So I'm like, okay, like, this could actually, you know, turn into something. Wake up, wake my husband up. I'm like, I think we're having a baby today. Like, I think I'm going into labor. And he's like, oh, that's great. Like, I'll call into work. My parents were coming up to take me to my appointments since my husband was supposed to be at work. So I go and have a shower. I'm getting all excited. And it just stops.
Aww, like, boo.
Yeah. So then I was like having a contraction like every 45 minutes. I'm like, okay, so it's nothing. Like, my husband, Dan, go to work. Yeah. Baby's not coming today. My mom will take me to the appointment. And my appointment was at the hospital. So we're walking into the hospital and my water breaks.
Oh. Yeah,
like right as I walk through the door, I'm like, mom, I think my water broke.
Was and it like dramatic or did it just?
No, it was
no,
just.
No, like, you just kind of felt it.
Yeah. And then I like took another step.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. No, because you know, like when you're pregnant, there's lots of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe I peed a little bit, but I took another step and there was like a little gush and like, okay, no, my water definitely broke. So we went up to labor and delivery and kind of got that whole process started. At first they were testing it and they're like, no, your water, it's not your waters. And I'm like, okay, like I know pregnant people pee themselves, but I'm pretty sure that this wasn't pee. And then when my midwife was like doing another swab, my actual like full waters was this one. She's like, okay, nope, that was definitely your waters. My midwife was actually already at the hospital. So in Canada, our midwives work in hospitals too. My midwife was already at the hospital for a planned C-section. So she's like, okay, well, like I'm with this patient now. So kind of got a few options. Like you can get induced now since I was GBS positive, or you got a few hours to try to get labor started on its own. And even though I was planning to have a like drug-free birth, we had a friend who recently had an induction and didn't need an epidural or anything like that and said it, you know, it wasn't that bad. So I'm like, you know what, let's get this thing started. So that was probably around 8 a.m. that I was at the hospital. And then by 11, I was induced. And at first it was like chill. Like my husband and I were just hanging out. I got into the tub at our hospital and it has like jets and stuff. So that was nice. But very quickly things went from like, okay, like uncomfortable to, I felt like I just couldn't take a breather between.
They were just like back to back, 0 to 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like we had all these plans, like we thought we did a good job prepping for birth. I learned later that we could have done so much more.
Yeah.
But we was in the tub and there was a little bit of like a lapse in care, I'd say, in that first birth because we were alone a lot.
Oh, interesting.
In terms of, I think, with our midwife with the C-section. And then since it was a transfer of care, because I was induced, the nurses were supposed to be involved. But I think it was kind of like, you know, not just between those people, we got missed a little bit because at the point when I was like, I want an epidural. And even though my birth plan, I was like, okay, if I ask for it, like, you know, don't give it to me right away. But I was like, no, no, no. Like, I felt like there was nothing else we could do except get that epidural. So we had to like page a nurse to come in and got that going. And that was fine. I was very scared about the epidural for no like real reason. I just am not a big needles person. And just the idea of it, I think the worst part of the epidural is just when you have to sit there and curve your back through contractions, but
and sit still, like not move. Yeah.
I remember my husband was like holding my face and I'm like, I think I'm going to pass out. Like just having to go through that and sitting there. But I very quickly realized why people get epidurals, because the rest of it was really chill.
Cool. So it worked good. Like, nothing.
No problems.
Good.
We used like a peanut ball. So I was changing sides throughout it. My sister was coming. She lives 3 hours away. So she got there right as I got the epidural, like right after, which she didn't have any kids yet. So my mom was like, I think it's probably a good thing that she got there once the epidural was in. So she didn't have to see the...
And scare her a little bit.
The stressful parts. So I got the epidural around 2 and I think I was like 4 centimeters. So I'd done some stuff, or 6. I need to write these things down.
Yeah, it's okay. I know. It all flows together.
I had some, you know, change, but not like a ton. And I was like, okay, let's just, you know, chill out for the rest. So I just talked with my sister. So like the afternoon was super chill. And then I remember it was around 7 p.m. So right before shift change, I started shaking and I was like laughing. And our nurse, who was lovely, was like, let me just check you before I go off and just, you know, see where you're at. Probably since I was like showing some of the signs. And she was checking me and I was laughing about something. And she's like, oh, you're just going to laugh this baby out. Like, baby is right there. So like, we're going to get this thing started. I was like, okay, great. But then very quickly things started to change. So my midwife came in, because even though there was a transfer of care, since I was induced and epidural, they can still do the delivery and everything. So she came in, we had the nurse in there and kind of got me ready to start pushing. That was one thing I don't think I had prepared for in terms of if I had gotten epidural, the pushing and not knowing, not feeling anything. So I was trying, and very quickly our daughter started going into distress in terms of her heart rate dropping pretty scary levels pretty quickly with every contraction and push. So I just remember like laying in the bed. I'm like, I don't know if I'm, you know, if I'm doing the right things, if I'm pushing like, you know, the right way. And very quickly, like, okay, they're paging the OB to come in. And then he's paging more nurses in. And then I can hear them paging to prep carts and NICU team and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like sitting, like laying there.
Was anybody like telling you kind of what was going on, or were you just kind of hearing
mostly
this all
just
going on?
Hearing like from what they were telling kind of each other. And like the doctor was like, okay, like the OB was like, we need to get this baby out quickly. And so I'm like thinking that, I'm like, okay, am I gonna do an emergency C-section? But I think that the reason they didn't have to was because she was pretty low like throughout this. So it was about 10 minutes later from when I started pushing that they first tried a vacuum on her and that popped off. And then so they decided to do forceps and an episiotomy. So that happened and they pulled her out. I think that the hardest part of that was definitely the like baby being taken to the warmer to get checked up on. So things I really hadn't like even thought about happening.
Yeah, you think that baby's just going to come out, come right on your chest. But, you know, sometimes you're not prepared for that. Like, okay, baby might come out and not be okay, and we need to help baby out, and then, you know, hopefully baby can come back over. But yeah, that's scary if you don't know that going in.
Totally. And like, she was fine. Like,
yeah, good.
She had a very thin cord wrapped around her neck, so like it was just a lot of compression, I think, when she was coming out, because the cord was quite thin. And, you know, they checked her out, and for me, like, I think, you know, all the medical professionals in the room, as soon as she started crying and stuff, they're like, oh, she's good. But like, is she okay? Is she okay? Yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, she's fine. I'm like, okay. Like, someone could have reassured me on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she was fine. So that was wonderful. We did have to stay in the hospital a little bit longer because of the forceps. So we had to like monitor for any kind of head issues. And our poor girl, she had like forceps marks like on the side of her face. Her nose was like crooked. She had a black eye and she had a big bump on her head from the vacuum. So yeah. She looked like she had been through the ringer, but she was fine. And that, I think it was so overwhelming to go through that. And then it's like, okay, here's your baby, like go home. And that's just kind of go with it. And I don't think it really hit me right away, like how scary that had been in the moment, until like start, you know, the days after when you're alone with a baby and you start thinking through it all.
Like yeah. What the F just happened to me, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how did this all happen? And grieving the birth I thought I was going to have versus the one I had. So that was difficult to work through. And I think that was part of the reason I definitely went into some postpartum depression and anxiety. Well, like it was a lot of things. I think birth definitely was part of it. My husband went back to work like when he was like, she was 4 or 5 days old.
Oh yeah.
And then
that's so hard.
Yeah. When you're just alone with a baby. And I'm a very stubborn person. And also I think I was a little naive about what it takes to care for a baby. So I was like, yeah, like a baby sleeps a lot. Like we can do this. And I went back to work 2 weeks postpartum because I'm self-employed. So I was working at home basically when my daughter was sleeping in a wrap on me, was doing client work. So that was a lot to manage that. At 3 months, my husband was able to take off his parental leave. So he was off, and that kind of
let us
settle into our new routines and sleep and counseling, and our daughter growing out of her colic definitely helped.
Oh, and she had colic too. Oh man. Yeah. You had all of it, didn't you?
Yeah. We realized when she was 6 weeks old that she had a milk protein allergy.
Oh.
So that helped a lot of things. Like we did all the things you know, the chiropractor, getting her checked for a tongue tie, all these things. And the milk helped a lot in terms of her demeanor. And
yeah, if you don't mind speaking on that for just a second,
yeah.
What you did you continue to breastfeed her and take dairy out of your diet, or did you switch her to formula, or kind of what was that process?
So I did continue to breastfeed, and that was, I think, so overwhelming in terms of like having to, like at 2 weeks old, I was, you know, on Facebook groups, like talking about what she was like. So I'm like, okay, I feel like babies shouldn't cry this much. Like, I feel like something's not right. And, you know, people talk about different things. And then one of the things I said, like, it sounds like between the rash, you know, the gassiness, the colic, it wouldn't hurt to cut milk out. And that felt so overwhelming because I had, you know, freezers full of food that had dairy in it. I love cheese so much. And like,
who doesn't? 2 weeks,
yeah.
It's hard. It's so hard.
Yeah. At 2 weeks postpartum, I had no like mental capacity to make that change. So I'm like, okay, well, let's keep trying. And at 6 weeks, we were seeing our last midwife appointment. And my midwife was like, is that the same rash she's had like since birth? Like since, and I'm like, yeah. She's like, yeah, that's definitely milk. And I said, oh God. And at that point, you know, a little bit more sleep, I said, okay, let's do this. I wanted to keep breastfeeding. So I completely cut milk out, and I breastfed for 2 years. So I breastfed for 2 years, didn't really eat any dairy after that. Ate a little bit when I was pregnant this time, just because I had like a lot of cravings, but now I'm again, dairy free. I know it feels like such an overwhelming thing to do when you're in that situation. And I will say to any moms listening who are thinking about it or wondering about it, it gets so much easier. Like the first week is so hard because it takes a lot of brain space to think about what can I eat or what are alternatives I can have. But once you get it, kind of your regulars figured out, dairy-free ice cream is just as good.
Cool.
Like oat milk is so good. The cheese is the only thing that you can't find the exact like goodness of, but overall, like it's been, I mean, I've been dairy free now for almost 3.5 years. So
wow. Yeah, I did dairy free for a little while and I just couldn't. I'm like, this is just, it helps my stomach so much, but I'm like, oh gosh, because you're right. The cheese is the hardest part. Like when I was doing it, I was like, I'm not even going to do the substitute cheese. I'm just not going to eat cheese because I can't deal with that, the substitute cheese.
Yeah, I dream about pizza sometimes, like in my dreams. And I think, like, I tried eating some dairy but my body now is like, doesn't know how to process it.
If it's been so long. Yeah.
Yeah. But probably when I'm done breastfeeding this kiddo, I will slowly get it back in my system because I really, really want cheese.
Cool. Cool. Well, something to look forward to, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to your son and his pregnancy and kind of getting pregnant with him. What were your thoughts and feelings, you know, revolving around like getting pregnant again? Were you nervous? Were you scared?
Definitely scared. So I remember crying like 3 days postpartum with my daughter to my husband saying like, I don't think we should have another kid, like just overwhelmed by everything. And it took me a long time to get to the point where it was even like a possibility in my head, because that first one was so difficult and that like the postpartum period was so hard. But we like eventually I'm like, okay, we can do things differently. And I knew that if we were going to have another kid, like we would have to do things differently. So that was like the biggest thing, was like the planning, and it was a lot more intentional. So we said, like, we decided to start trying. And again, we were really blessed and got pregnant in like the second month of trying. So that was spring 2021, and really excited. I'm someone like, I'm very open about sharing like early pregnancy, because I think it's important that we talk about, you know, the excitement, but also like if something were to happen, I'd want those people there to support me. So we told like our good friends, our family. So that was really exciting. We were really, really happy. We had one scare, which like, I'm not going to say it's a funny story, but I woke up one morning and had blood in my underwear. So obviously started freaking out, and, you know, we were planning to go to the hospital, like literally about to leave the hospital. I'm like, it's really stinging. Like, I think this is really weird feeling. And it turns out I had somehow cut myself in the night.
Interesting.
Like, whether I had scratched myself or something, and that's what was bleeding.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like, never, like, my emotions that day were definitely like a huge flip of what we thought was happening. So the beginning of the pregnancy was uncomplicated, but definitely, like, I think both thinking about the birth of the last one, but also just like pandemic and everything during this pregnancy made it a little bit more difficult mentally. And I also had a friend who passed away in childbirth when I was 6 weeks pregnant.
Oh,
which is like, it's like unheard of, right? Like it's so absolutely rare. And like, you know, there was no way of knowing, like, which is, it's always a scary story to talk about. Like, I know it is like incredibly rare.
Very, very rare. Very, very rare. But still scary nonetheless, when especially when it happens to somebody that is so close to you.
Yeah. And just so I think I was about 6 weeks pregnant. So it was very, just the rest of the pregnancy, as you can imagine, there was questions and thoughts kind of going through your head. Overall, an uncomplicated pregnancy. My placenta was a little low-lying, so I had some extra ultrasounds just to check on that placement. And so in terms of like the planning we did in this pregnancy, because like I said, we knew it had to be different. Like on the work side, basically all of my 2021 was planning to take 3 months off. So getting everything in place with my team so I could actually have some mental space.
That is the tough part about being a business owner, is like, I did the same thing. I wasn't a business owner like with my first, but like with my second, you're right. It's like, it takes a lot of mental power and prep to like go on a maternity leave, because it's your business, you know, like you run the show.
So many things, like literally so much of my brain power last year was just prepping for this mat leave, and I'm actually going back to work next week. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to actually have like some more capacity, because I'm not going to be planning all this stuff and prepping all this stuff. So we had that in place. My husband was going to take parental leave from day one, so it'd be both of us home. You know, I was still seeing my counselor. Like, I had all these kind of things lined up. And then the other piece, because as I said, I thought we were, you know, prepared for birth and like knew what to expect, but realized in that first one that we had no idea what we were doing. So the other piece is I found you on Instagram.
Yay.
And I think I might have started following you actually before I was pregnant. It was like, you know, maybe like someday soon. Well, and then I think it was one sale or something that you were pushing the birth courses. And I'm like, this is exactly what I need. And I had listened to your podcast of your birth stories. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this seems right in line with what I wanted to do. And that was the one thing I felt with the first birth. I really felt like birth happened to me, that I wasn't like in control. And I know you can't control birth, but I wanted to feel empowered. That was the word I chose going into my second birth.
All right, the sound of that baby crying means it's time for this week's segment of Birth It Up Babies. All right, this gal said, hi, I have no idea if you'll see this. Oh, I get a lot of like DMs that start with that, and we do see them. We do see your DMs. She says, but I wanted to reach out anyways. My husband and I took your online epidural birthing class last fall. Our baby girl was born in November. I just wanted to say thanks for having that available. It truly helped so much. I wanted to share with you how towards the end of my labor, I was getting uncomfortable and starting to stress a little as it was getting so close to pushing. The baby wasn't quite moving how my doctor wanted, and my husband remembered how you said to try different positions, like sitting up, and he completely advocated for me to have help sitting up in my bed. He is a pretty soft-spoken guy, so this was huge. Oh, that's so great. And she says it really helped. After about 10 minutes of sitting up, she was ready to come out. I would have never remembered that in the moment, but my husband did. I didn't think either of us could have stayed as calm and enjoyed our birth experience quite as much without your class and your advice. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, that is so sweet. If you want to check out the course that this girl took, she took Birth It Up, the epidural series, and you can head over to mommylabornurse.com and click on the epidural series to learn more. All right, let's get right back into this week's episode.
Yeah, cool. No, I love it. I mean, that's, I hear that often actually, that it's like you just feel like it happens to you. You feel like you're not an active participant in this. If you feel like things are just going on.
Yeah, exactly. So this time I'm like, okay, I want to set myself up so that regardless of how birth happens, like what the outcome is, that throughout it, I feel empowered and educated and like I'm making decisions. And so I knew like education would be like one of the biggest things that could help with that. So I started your course, I think my late second trimester, and binged it all. And then my husband and I went through and like rewatched it. And we actually, I think I was about 38 weeks pregnant when you launched the new version of it.
So, oh, good. You got the new one. Cool.
I got the new one. So then I went through and like watched it all again. Cool. And I remember like I was, you know, doing my mile circuit and listening to it and doing all the things and eating the dates. And it just made me feel so much better. And like some of the pieces that we've learned about in the course, like absolutely helped us in the labor, which I'll get into, but definitely in those last 2 weeks of pregnancy, that course was really good. Just kind of reaffirm everything. And I went through like all the, like I listened to the C-section parts, like I listened to everything. So I had an understanding, and I listened to like all the birth stories on your podcast, which I really loved.
Good.
I listened to the Birth Hour podcast.
Yes. I love to recommend that one.
Yeah. And I really liked, there was such a wide range of birth stories. So I looked at ones that were like, oh, positive home birth to hospital transfer and things like that, so that I could get a sense of kind of any outcome. Because at that point we had decided that we were going to go for a birth at our midwife's birthing clinic.
Cool.
But I still wanted to be okay with, you know, whatever happens, feeling like some knowledge of the situation and like what could happen. So that was our plan. I was GBS positive again, but we could, like, my midwives were very, you know, had no concerns about it. And
yeah, they were like, whatever, we'll deal with it when you're in labor.
Yeah, when it happens.
Yeah.
I was expecting to go over again, but for some reason, like as I hit like that 38 week mark, even though I had told myself I was due November 27th, I said, I'm going to have a December baby. But for some reason, as soon as that 38 week mark hit, it just felt like this baby was going to come soon. And even at my 38 week appointment, my midwife said, I'm surprised you're still pregnant. And for no medical reason, but just like, just a feeling she had. So
interesting.
Yeah. And then since my water had broken, not in labor the first time, that was not a concern, but you know, it could happen again. So it was a really weird time of wondering, Is my water just going to break randomly? Is labor going to start? You know, what's going to happen? And so for 2 weeks that happened, and then I hit 40 weeks. And again, I thought I had prepared to go over, but holy moly, like the mental strain it felt. And I think what was hard is I said this to a friend who was also pregnant at the time, is I had done so much work, like with your course, listening to all the birth stories. Like I felt like I was prepping for a marathon, like doing the mile circuit every day, everything. But I didn't know when the marathon was going to be.
Yeah. It's like, you can't control that part of it, you know, unless you get induced or something like that. But yeah, I know. It's like, I'm going to try and control everything else, but I can't control like when it actually happens, which is like just weird to think about, you know?
It's so weird. Like it's such a big, you know, life-changing moment. And my friend actually just got it. She's like, it's like waiting between two worlds. Like you're stuck in this middle point.
Yep. Yep.
So we just every day just kept going. I was sleeping really horribly. So that also didn't help.
Yeah.
But so I was trying to nap. And again, I was doing the miles, like curb walking, doing all the things, sitting on my exercise ball, like doing all the things. And then actually a Friday, so the day before I turned 41 weeks, my husband and I were watching a Christmas movie. So it was December 3rd. And around 8 p.m. started having contractions. And I was like, you know, they could be something. But at that point, I was kind of not defeated, but I was just like, it will happen when it will happen. I'm not going to get excited about, you know, anything.
Yeah.
So we're watching our movie. I'm like finishing my puzzle. And I'm about 8 to 10 minutes apart in contractions. I'm like, okay, like that's decently consistent. For a couple hours, they stayed. And so about 9:30, my husband said, I think we should call your parents. So my parents live about an hour away and they were going to come and stay with our daughter. It's like, I think we should call your parents. I'm like, I don't think so. I don't want to get my hopes up. Like, what if this is nothing? It's like, it's late at night. Like, let's call them. Let's get them here. If they go home tomorrow, it's not a big deal. I'm like, okay, I call my parents. I'm like, just so you know, like I'm having some contractions. Maybe you guys should think about coming up. They're like, okay, we'll be there in an hour and a bit. So they started packing up. And at 10 o'clock, I was like, okay, this actually might be something. The contractions were starting to get a little bit more intense, still like 8 to 10 minutes apart, but I'm like, this could be something. So I contacted our doula, which is another piece I got in place for this birth because I knew that support would be amazing. So I contacted our doula and I'm like, I think I'm in labor. And she's like, okay, like try to get some sleep. Call me when, you know, when it's go time. So I'm like, okay, I'll try to get some sleep. So my husband passed out and I'm in bed. I put The Office on. This is one of my like, you know, comfort shows. And I would like doze in and out, like between contractions. I'd sleep a little bit and I'd just watch a little bit of TV. And it was very manageable laying in bed. And then at 3 a.m., I woke my husband up. I said, okay, like things are happening. We need to get out of bed and I need to move and stuff.
And remind me, your water hasn't broken or anything yet,
no.
right?
No. Yeah. So no, okay. Water hasn't broken.
Okay.
So we went out to our living room. And I think the most amazing part of early December, baby, is I'm a huge Christmas person. So we had our Christmas tree on with the lights on.
Oh.
So it's so nice. Like we're in the living room.
Chills. Oh. Yeah. That's
it was so,
cool.
Nice. Yeah. It was very calm. I labored a lot on hands and knees over my birth ball and just like swayed through contractions. In pregnancy, we had done a lot of practicing of double hip squeeze and I really liked it, but in labor, didn't like it. So it was really interesting to see the difference, but I liked a lot of like sacral pressure.
Cool.
He'd put his hands on my back. And so I just stayed on hands and knees the whole time, would get up a little bit to move around between contractions. And at 4:30, I think I was about 6 minutes apart, 4 to 6 minutes apart. And we're like, okay, like things are starting to happen. So we decided to call our doula and page our midwives, let them know that, okay, things were happening. So we called our midwife and she was at a birth an hour away.
Oh.
So she was doing like the postpartum checkup. So she's like, I'm going to be done here soon. How about we meet at the clinic in about an hour? She listened to a couple of my contractions. She's like, okay, let's meet there about 6 a.m. and we'll get you checked up. My doula arrived around 5 and that's when things like really got into high gear. So I think looking back now, that was that switch really into like active labor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I really had to focus through contractions. I did a lot of standing up, slow dancing with my husband. So hands on his shoulders, and my doula would put pressure on my back. And then my midwife called back and she said, I actually can't leave this birth. There was like some bleeding she had to monitor. So she said, I'm going to have a different midwife meet you at the clinic. So it was someone we hadn't met before, because our midwife and our backup midwife were both at birth. But we're like, okay, sure, let's do it. And our doula got us ready to go in the car. I used a TENS machine for the trip to the midwife clinic, which was really nice. So when I had a contraction, I'd hit the button and it would pulse the electrical currents in my back, which really helped, because I was really worried about having to sit down in the vehicle since I had done so much standing and on my hands and knees. And I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. So we put some All Too Well on in the car, which is my favorite song. And my husband like full blasted it so I could just like sing and like try to focus on making it to the clinic.
Love it.
And then we got out of the van, and like, even when we were getting into the van, I'd have to stop to do a contraction. Same thing when we got there. We got in, we got up to the birthing suite upstairs, and we met the midwife, who was lovely. And she's like, okay, we'll do a check. And I hadn't got any checks, except for at 40 weeks, I thought my water might've broken. So I did a swab and then did a check. And I was, I think, 1 centimeter. So nothing really to write home about. So I hadn't had any checks since then, and my water was still intact. So I'm like, okay, let's do one to see if, you know, if this is the real deal. And in my head, I said, okay, if I'm 4 centimeters dilated, we can do this. Like I can do this. Yeah. I'm going to stay here. And Caitlin, the midwife, checks me and she starts laughing. And I'm like, she's like, you're a stretchy 7.
Ooh.
I'm like, okay. And like, she's like, we're going to have a baby soon. I'm like, okay. Yay. And that was one of my midwife's main concerns, actually, since I had gotten induced with my first around 11 a.m. and she was born at 7. So pretty quick, even induction, first labor. So my midwives were very adamant about when I would need to go to the clinic and getting there in time, and just because things might happen quickly. So where in my head, I was like preparing myself. I'm like, okay, 36 hours of labor. Like I wanted to be prepared for like anything, but I was like, oh, like that's a baby coming soon.
Yeah.
So we started to get ready. I did a lot more standing, and then I decided to get into the tub, and that really is kind of when transition hit. And I didn't really know it at the time. I was really thinking transition was going to be the hardest part for me, but pushing actually ended up being. So like when transition happened, I instinctively did horse lips. I had learned about them in the course.
Yeah.
But it just kind of like happened.
It just came out. Yeah. That's how I was too. It's weird how that happens.
I know when we were watching the course, my husband's like, oh, it's kind of weird. Yeah. Like I get it, I guess. And I just
start doing it.
Yeah. And I'm like, you can't judge me now. And that was like a huge help. Like it just really helped relax through those contractions. And I was in the tub, and I had gotten onto my hands and knees since that was such a comfortable position beforehand. But as soon as I got on my hands and knees, like things felt so intense. Like it was almost like contraction wasn't stopping. So I'm like, okay, I need to go on my back, like onto my back again, because I can't deal with that like constant pressure. And I said to my midwife, because she had said, okay, let me know when you feel like you have to poop or you feel pressure. And I'm like, I feel a lot of pressure. She's like, oh, don't worry. I already paged the other midwife like 20 minutes ago because I knew this baby was coming. I'm like, okay. So they were reading the room really well. So I was on my back and I'm like, I have to start pushing. And they're like, okay, like let's do this. So I started pushing at 8 a.m. So 2 hours after we had arrived at the clinic. And between pushes, my midwife checked me and I was 9.5. Like there was like a lip.
Oh,
she's like, okay, so like if you just keep pushing, like that lip will come out. So that happened. And the real crazy thing is that my water still hadn't broken.
Oh yeah. I forgot. I was like, crazy. You didn't say anything about your water breaking. Oh, interesting.
My water still hadn't broken.
Yeah, so you were like pushing on that bag. Yeah.
Yeah. So I pushed for probably about half an hour with the water still intact.
Mm-hmm.
And my midwife said, like, I can break it. It's going to help bring the baby down. And I said, okay, let's do it. Like I wanted to have as little interventions as possible. But at this point, I'm like, if that's going to help this get going, like let's do it.
Yeah.
So she broke the water. Baby came down a lot lower. The one thing I like did not expect was the pushing phase. Like I really thought, okay, once I get through transition, because I remember you talking about other people saying that like pushing's almost like a relief because that's like, okay, I can do something. But man, I felt like found pushing so hard. So I'm like pushing. We actually tied a rebozo to like a handle on the tub. Like the tub had like, you know, different grips.
Yeah.
So my doula tied a rebozo to it and I'm like pulling on it as I'm pushing. But we had to stop that because I almost pulled the handlebar off the wall. I was going for it.
Yeah.
So I kept pushing. And at one point I was getting a little frustrated. And I'm like, okay, I think I want to go to the bed or something where I can go on hands and knees. I was too tall to deliver on hands and knees in the tub because it would be slightly out of the water.
Oh, I see.
So they said, okay, you either have to get out of the tub to be on hands and knees or stay on your back. I'm like, I want to get out of the tub. But as soon as I started moving, I was like, okay, no, there's no way I'm going to be able to like get out of here. So kept pushing, kept listening to Taylor Swift, my husband.
Yeah. He brought the Taylor Swift into the birth center. Yes. Cool. Yeah.
My husband was doing like really wonderful affirmations. My midwife and my doula were so like positive and, you know, really making me believe I could do it. Cause at one point I'm like, I can't do this. But I'm like, no, like there's no other choice other than to push this baby out.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I very clearly remember all of it, which I felt weird too. I thought I would be kind of like in a different like birth world, people talk about like birth brain. I was so present. It was so weird. Like I remember everything, like feeling the head in my pelvis, like all of that. And when he came out, it was just like, oh my God, like there's pictures. I just look so like shocked. And we didn't know what we were having this time.
Oh,
we had found out with my daughter, but with Teddy, we didn't find out. And so, you know, had that moment, the midwives grabbed the baby, put him on my chest. And I'm like, oh my God, like I did it. And they're like, lift them up to see what it is. I'm like, I can't. I was just like so exhausted and like in shock, I think, too. I'm like, someone lift him up. So I lift him up. He was a boy.
Aww.
So we were so excited. And he like, he was great. Everyone was fine. Funny though, like from 26 weeks at an ultrasound, he had been in the exact same position, sideways, with his head down, like looking to my left. And I tried spinning babies. I did the mile circuit. I did everything. My midwives were like, well, maybe he'll just turn in labor. Like, that's no problem. But nope, he didn't turn in labor. He just came out looking to his left. His head didn't mold at all. All came out.
Interesting. So, yeah. Some, your pelvis must just be shaped that way. And, you know, baby's like, okay, this is how I'm getting out this way.
This is how it's going to go. So he came out. They know the midwives did all the check. It took a little bit to get my placenta out. Like the midwives weren't worried, but I was at the point where I was like starting to get concerned. So they had given me a shot of oxytocin right after, just because the labor had been pretty fast and nothing was happening. And my cord again was very thin. So I didn't want to pull on it at all in case it broke. So they got me out of the tub. I was laying in bed, trying to do some pushes. I got baby on the boob. Still wasn't happening. So they gave me another shot of oxytocin and I got on the birth stool and was breastfeeding. And then that was all taken care of. So that was good to get that done. The other piece of labor was, which is kind of funny, is the antibiotics for GBS.
Oh yeah.
So that was the other piece about, you know, trying to make sure that I got the penicillin. So I was in the tub and like things were getting pretty intense and my midwife is trying to get the IV in and she tried twice and didn't get it in. And she's like, you know, like you're going to have a baby soon. Any protection is good, but I understand if you don't want me to try again. I said, okay, let's try one more time. And if it doesn't work, I can't sit here still while you try to put an IV in. So thankfully third time was the perfect try. Got in, I got a full dose before baby was born. So that was really good. And then the wild thing about like this birth was we recovered at the midwife clinic for 3 hours. They did all the checks. I had that hour of skin to skin time and then we went home.
Yeah, that's great. Which
was wild. So it's just like, okay, I guess we just go home now. Such a different experience, both like my mentally and physically, like no episiotomy, no tearing. I felt, other than being exhausted and felt like I'd hit by a truck, like I felt great. Like it was just, okay, let's go home. And our daughter was so excited to meet her baby brother. And we just had like some really nice cuddles in bed for a long time.
Oh, that is so sweet. So it sounds like such like a redemption sort of birth from your first experience.
Absolutely. It really was healing for me. And all that work I did, I think, in pregnancy was to be at a point where, regardless of how that birth happened, I wanted it to be healing. Like, even if it ended up in a C-section, I wanted to feel like I was a part of it. Like, I knew what was happening. I made decisions. So I think I did that work. But for it to come out to be the way, like, exactly how I had kind of pictured it, I had never really thought of having a water birth. Like, it was, like, sure, would be okay. Yeah. But just that whole experience was so wonderful. And I feel like such a badass.
Yeah, totally. I know. I totally know that feeling. That is amazing. How has your postpartum recovery been around this time?
Physically, amazing. Like, again, like the difference of not having episiotomy was so much different. Like, I just felt a lot better, but I actually had done less. So with my first daughter, I think I felt pressure. I don't know from who, but I just was like, okay, like, let's just go live our lives. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was like 5 days postpartum. I had her at the grocery store, like going, getting groceries, like things I did not need to be doing. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Teddy, I knew, I'm like, I am in bed for at least a week and everyone can come and do stuff for me. So we had my parents come and stay with us to help, you know, take care of me and our daughter. So I really was like, I'm not doing anything I don't need to be doing, and really focused on healing myself and getting to know Teddy. Mentally, this postpartum, I really thought we had like done all the work, but it just shows that like you can't control your brain and your hormones and everything. Because I think it was like 3 days postpartum, I started having panic attacks in the night. So our little guy wouldn't sleep, not being held, which I'm like, I totally get it, dude. Like, you were just inside me for 9 almost 10 cozy months.
Yep.
So that sleep deprivation, like, plus that I wasn't sleeping well before he was born, I think really piled up. So I started dealing with that. And then at 2 weeks postpartum, decided to start taking some anxiety medication, which I've always been an anxious person. So I think like it totally was the right choice. And I had really already done like the work to think about that before he came, knowing that there was a good chance I would have postpartum anxiety again. This time it's been a lot different than the first one, more intense this time. And I think it's, again, pandemic, older kid, like the world.
It's much different. Yeah, exactly. Like, you have another child to take care of too. Like, that's a big piece of it.
Totally. And like, we tried all the things. I was like, okay, I'm going to try co-sleeping. Cause again, we all need to get some sleep. And I did that for a couple nights, which was working. But then Teddy started getting super gassy. So then he wouldn't sleep unless he was being held upright because of the gas. So then we worked through that. But actually, the crummy part was like on Christmas. That's when I had like the worst panic attack. I hadn't slept in a couple days. So I'm like, I need something. I need to sleep. And I knew like sleep was going to be like the biggest savior for me. And we had tried a few things in terms of, I was going to bed at like 7. My husband would have the baby, have Teddy until like 1 or 2 in the morning. And for a while he was waking me up for me to breastfeed, but then we're like, I was pumping. So he would give him a bottle and that was working, but I think it was like a little too late. Mm-hmm. So thankfully on Christmas, I got some benzodiazepines.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not even saying it right, but yes, some anxiety medicine.
Yeah. So some like more like specific, like in use anxiety medication help with panic attack. So started with that. My parents came back and actually lived with us for like a month almost, and did like, they literally saved our butts and did night shifts because Teddy was like, just wasn't sleeping independently. So my husband would have him until like 1 in the morning. My mom would do a 3-hour shift with him. And then my dad would get up early and hold our baby, which was the only thing that really got us through. And now he's starting to figure it out. It's funny because I thought with like my daughter, we had been through that gassy baby that, and somehow this child is even gassier than she was. But like, we've done it all, you know, chiropractor, he got a tongue tie clipped, osteopath, you know, belly rubs, I don't eat dairy, all the things. But I think it's just, you know, he's a gassier.
Some people just are. Yeah.
We're figuring it out and he's figuring out. And like I was saying earlier, like he's 2.5 months now and it's like been the longest time, but it also feels like it's gone by quickly. But it's wild to see now that he's, you know, smiling and talk like cooing, and it makes such a big difference.
Yeah, it does. It's like, oh, you're actually like, you're crying all the time, but like, oh, there's that glimmer that you're kind of smiling at me and you know who I am. And okay, it makes it a little tiny bit easier. I know. I remember like one time it was the middle of the night and he just had a really, really bad night, and he was older. So he was like starting to talk, and he just like looked up at me and said, "Mama." And he had said "mama" like before, but I was like, okay.
Yeah, I guess it's okay.
Yeah.
I was saying that to my parents, is that I think Teddy is the smiliest after a night he didn't sleep well. I'm like, maybe it's like an evolutionary like survival tactic. Like, they need to be cute.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it goes back to, you know, that whole thought of like, you look back at baby pictures when your babies are little and you're like, how did I think my baby was cute? He's like all wrinkly and like, he's way cuter now. But you're like, this is the cutest little thing in the entire world.
Yeah, they know how to get you.
I know. Oh my goodness. Well, Kat, thank you so much for joining me today. This was such a fabulous story that you were able to share with us. Do you want to share like your social media or anything if people want to follow along? You know,
sure. If you want to see my escapades as a business owner and mother of two, my business is at Social Kat Media, and that's Kat with a K. And I'm just prepping to get back to work now. So I'm excited and also terrified.
Yeah. Well, good luck. I'm sure you'll do great.
Thank you. And thank you so much for like everything you do. Like, I can't say enough positive things about like all the reels, all the Instagram content, the course, the emails, like everything just made me feel, entertained sometimes, but like educated and really empowered for what was to come.
Good. Oh, well, thank you. That's really good to hear, because that's the feeling that we're trying to get, you know, everybody that goes through the series and goes through the courses and sees the reels and sees the feed posts. That's the feeling that I want people to feel. So it's great to hear that you feel that way.
Yeah, it was definitely the outcome was empowered and educated.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks.
All right, guys, that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and letting me be a part of your motherhood journey. It is truly an honor. If you like what you heard, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And I love hearing what you guys think of the podcast. So if you're liking what you hear or you have a suggestion, I'd be so grateful if you'd go ahead and leave me a review wherever you're listening to help more mamas just like you find the show. What do you think? Are you starting to feel a little more confident about your pregnancy and birth? Well, if you want more, be sure to head on over to mommylabornurse.com/podcast for today's show notes and a library of episodes so you can keep getting educated before your upcoming birth. And while you're over there, be sure to check out the blog and learn about our online birth classes. Find it all and more over at mommylabornurse.com/podcast. See you next week. Same time, same place.